Very well. Anyway, yeah, while we're all here tonight, let's welcome Sarah M. from Hollywood with 10 Years Clean.
There we go. Lower it for an acoustic guitar. That's where I like my mic. Hi. How's everybody doing? Woo! Yay! I'm so excited to be here. Can we make some noise for the committee right now? Thank you guys so much. Really. This is my first time at this blues festival, but I have a feeling that we're all going to get really wild tomorrow. You know what I mean? I feel it. Samantha, Jasmine, Brock, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. Anyone? Welcome. You guys are the most important people here. And if there's anyone out there that couldn't identify as new, welcome. People that did identify, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life. So welcome, and I really mean that. Welcome, I see you. Yeah, hi. Welcome. Hey. Okay. So I'm not from here, if you can't tell. I drove from Hollywood today. It was a beautiful, yeah. Oh, hey. Yep. Yeah, it was beautiful. I'm so excited that there's mountains. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm like, what? Okay, there's a mountain. I'm in a barn or a rodeo right now. I don't know what's going on, but I love it all. I'm wearing Nikes. I feel very prepared for this, you know? So, I'm really grateful to be here. How long do I talk for? 8 hours. Titanic? You want me to do a little Titanic right now? Yeah, a little monologue. Yeah. Never let go. Never let go. They just like, bye. I'm just kidding. Let go. Just let it all go. Just let all that stuff go. I have 10 years clean. I got clean at 17 years old. I'm just going to put that out there so you don't have to figure it out, because you're going to spend most of the time trying to figure it out. You're like, how old is she though? 14. Okay. Yeah, no, I'm going to be 28 years old in July, and I feel very, 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 very grateful. But regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion, everyone is welcome and a member of Narcotics Anonymous when you say you are. You know, and I really stand for that, and I really represent that, but I'm very grateful that I got here when I did, because I honestly don't know if I would have been alive. So my family, my mom, I just flew to New York last week, and then Florida. My mom's got 29 years clean. So cute. And my granny's got 30 years clean. Yeah, she's so intense. She 12 steps everything. Like, I'm like, that's a plant. It's fine without you. It's so intense. I'm like, you're embarrassing me for real, though. Just talking to a bush. So I've been with my family until I just got back to LA last week. So I've been with my family. So I'm still settling my spirit right now. I come from a long line of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, my aunt died with 7 years clean, drug-related complications. Unfortunately, my uncle died 2 years ago of a heroin overdose. My dad died when I was 12 of a heroin overdose. He died. He relapsed at 13 years clean and never came back. My grandfather died with 25 years clean, drug-related complications. And last week, not only was I celebrating my mom's anniversary, but I was also saying goodbye to my sister. So that's where I'm at right now. You know, my sister is, she's one of us, and, she weighs 75 pounds and she's 5'10", and, all I can do is pray for her, you know, because I can carry the message, but not the addict. And, so I'm a living testament to that, you know, and, but I, what I do believe in is Narcotics Anonymous. And so I believe that, when I can't find hope, you can for me, you know, and when I've lost, words to pray for someone that I love, that you can pray for me and you can carry me, because I can't carry the addict, but you can carry me. And so that's where I'm at right now. So it's really important for me to be here, for me. And also at the same time, you know, it's been very strange, but I feel so grateful for my life. You know, it's really funny because when I got here, I'll talk a little bit about before this, and then we'll segue back, hopefully. I have no idea what I'm going to say, but maybe I'll make it all connect. You know, so I grew up in an insane, like that, you know, like, I don't know about you guys, but crazy was the primary language we all spoke, and we had no idea that there was anything else out there. We were like, what? You know, I'm going to try not to curse because there's cute little babies, but that's all we did. We just spoke in profanity, like every three words, you know what I mean? We said something nice every three words, like pass and roll, and, you know, like endearing terms. And, you know, we didn't know any better. So even though my family was in recovery, we really didn't know any better. You know, I always say, you know, welcome to everyone, because when I got here, you know, it was like, if you're in relationships with people that beat you up, welcome to NA. You know, if you're in relationships where you beat people up, welcome to NA. You know, if you don't like to eat at all or you like to eat too much, welcome to NA. If you like people that don't like you and you want to date them and it's the same guy every time or the same girl, welcome to NA. You know what I mean? Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. We can fix all that if you want to. And if you want to stay that way, you can do that too. Welcome. You know, it's because that is my story, you know. So I came up and I grew up in New York, and I grew up with my mom, and my mom was in a series of abusive relationships with men in NA. And what I understood is that the way you communicate is with your hands and not sign language. And yeah. And so, you know, that's all I understood. And my first drug of choice, you know, for me personally, I grew up in such insanity that my first drug of choice was fantasy. And it still is today. You know, and what that looked like was Nancy Drew. And Nancy Drew was a girl detective, and she solved crime, and she went to high school, and she was a cheerleader. You know what I mean? I really wanted to be that, and I really wasn't. And so that's where I hid. And, you know, when I was, I started stealing at the age of five. I just, what it was that I wasn't enough, and I didn't have enough. And I needed what you had, and that still wasn't enough. You know, that's what I suffer from. You know, there's a lot of people, when we're new, we think this is a drug program. It's not, but welcome. You know, what this is, it's about the disease of addiction. And what the disease of addiction looks like is not enough all the time. You know, it's obsession and compulsion. It's anything. You know, for me, when I got here, I was like, I have a drug problem. I just need to learn how to smoke meth socially like a lady. Because I thought that was the thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's just meth smoking on the weekends or something. That's not a thing. There's no such thing. You know, but I really believed that. I was like, if I can just get this under control and stop hallucinating, I'll be fine because I'll get a boyfriend. And I got a lot of boyfriends, but that didn't fix anything. You know, but what I found out is that it's not for me. It's about the drugs, absolutely, because, of you know, the place I go is to the bottom, and drugs happen to be on the bottom. But it's really about anything that takes me out of myself. And I will use anything that takes me out of myself until it doesn't work, and then I will graduate whatever takes me out of myself. You know, and I've learned that through staying clean, because I've hit bottoms in recovery, and Netflix being one of them. You know what I mean? The darkest of bottoms, really. A little onesie, a little Netflix, bottom. So anyway, okay, all right. I'm just trying to tell my truth right now, you know. So anyway, I grew up with my mom, and eventually my mom didn't know how to take care of me, and so she sent me to live with my father, and I went out into the woods. With nudists. I lived on a nudist colony and an indigenous reservation because I'm Irish and Italian. and standard. You know what I mean? So that I connect with the mountains. You can't tell, but I grew up, my family was really intense. Like, if we killed anything, we had to eat all of it. So, like, we hit a raccoon, and we had to skin it, make a drum out of it, and make dinner. You know, and that's how I grew up. Pretty normal, very Brady Bunch, and what I'm talking about is just the insanity of going from one crazy to another crazy. So I went to go live with my dad, and by the age of 6 years old, I had to do laundry for the entire house, and I had to clean horses, and I just had a lot of responsibility, because the truth was that my parents were, my stepmom and my dad were allowing me to get molested by the neighbors, and they were allowing people to take me, and everybody was naked and everybody was insane, and my parents were actually in recovery at the time, you know, but there was still a lack of consciousness, because if you don't know better, you have no capability, and they really didn't know better. And when I got here, I didn't know that they didn't know better, but what I found out through doing step work is that nobody knew any better, so they did what they did, you know. So anyway, I grew up like that, and it was very confusing for me, but I did understand it at about the age of 7 that nothing was ever going to be okay. You know, if you want to if you're new and you don't know what I'm talking about, what I found out through a very thorough 4-step is the exact nature of my wrongs, and what the exact nature of my wrongs is my perception. I have a lot of character defects, but my perception is the biggest. You know, my perception shapes the world I live in. So when I look at you a certain way, I have to live out of that idea, and when you are my problem, there is no solution. So, hey. I feel like I should, like, do, like, some sort of a thing up here, but I don't know how to do anything, you know? Like, this is, like, the closest I'll ever get to being, like, a beauty queen, I feel like, with this little, you know what I mean? That's, like, a little stand, what happened? Okay, I love you, thank you, you're right. I am a beauty queen. Go. You know, my hair doesn't actually flip. I've dyed it so much it just stays, but that was my hair flip moment, you know what I mean? Just do a little bit of that. Doesn't move, though. Bigger the hair, the closer to God. I believe in that. Yeah. You know, we're tight. So, anyway, I lived in insanity. I like how we bounce back and forth. This is good. I lived in crazy, and, you know, and my dad started shooting heroin, and I started helping my dad shoot heroin, and I started getting my dad heroin, and I started facilitating this thing, and when he would throw up, I would clean him up. And eventually, I ended up alone. I dropped out of the 4th grade, and I was left alone in a room for a year by myself. What I'm talking about is depravity. I had absolutely no language. I didn't know how to speak. I didn't know how to talk. But what I did know how to do was read. And so all I did was read. And I created a world inside my mind. And I lived that way for quite some time. And eventually my dad died. And eventually the police came. And I had dirty hair and dirty fingernails. And I felt, all I felt was abandoned. All I felt was neglect. All I believed in was lack. One more time. So I go to live with my mom in Queens, New York, straight off a nudist colony, you know, in Queens, and it's different. It's a little bit different. You know, so I joined a Korean gang, legitimately, I'm not lying. I was like, fuck it, there's a lot of Koreans out here. Okay, what do you guys do? And, you know, and I started gangbanging, because that made the most sense. So I joined a Korean gang, and I was really good at it, and we ate octopus, and it was like a thing. And what I'm talking about is, like, you know, what I'm talking about is being able to fit in anywhere that I am at any given time, because I want to be anyone but who I am, you know. So I'll be in a Korean gang, and I'll be a nudist, and I'll be a chola, which I did, and, you know, I'll do it all. You know, I'll cover all my bases, because the truth was I didn't know who I was, and the truth was I was terrified of who I was. And when I got clean, I found out that the freedom from me not wanting to be me was because I had no idea, and I couldn't allow those things to be forgiven. And I couldn't forgive myself, so I had to be you. And that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to be you. You know what I mean? It is. It's a lot of work to be somebody I'm not. So I'm going to talk a little bit about... Wait, really? How long do I talk? Someone's going to, like, stop me, right? I'm just going to talk about being in Korean gangs all night. Okay. I'm like, and I got clean. Bye. So I, you know, my mom was in a multitude of abusive relationships. After that point, her boyfriend stalked me. You know, it was all insane all the time. And I remember believing, you know, I think for me, drugs saved my life at one point. I really do. I think they kept me, you know, getting through life on life's terms to a certain extent until I really could find a way to get out, you know, in real life. So anyway, I ended up moving to L.A. because my mom, they were going to put me in foster care in New York, and my mom had already moved to Los Angeles, and they were like, do you want to go there instead? And I was like, yeah, because Tupac. I was like, Tupac did it, so I can do it too. And, yep, and so I did, and there were still cops in Los Angeles, which was crazy to me. I was like, what are you doing here? You know, because I had started getting arrested by the age of, you know, 12, and I'd started doing drugs at 10, and, you know, it was just progressive, and it was weird, and eventually I ended up getting kidnapped, and eventually I'd been kidnapped and held by three men for days, and I was brutalized. And what I'm talking about, like, it, you know, when I got here, I was so full of shame. You know, when I got here, I was so broken, and I really believed that I would always be broken. I really, really believed that. And what I found out through doing step work and applying these principles in my life is that that is such a complete lie. I was never broken. There was never anything wrong with me. You know, they asked Michelangelo. Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, and I actually went with my mom to Italy 2 years ago for Christmas. And, you know, Michelangelo painted this incredible thing, but he was also a sculptor, and they asked him, how did you make David? How did you sculpt David? Like, how did you make this thing? And he said, all I did was take away what didn't belong there. That's what step work was for me. There was nothing wrong with me. I just had to shed that stuff that didn't belong there. I had to shed all that misinformation. I had to shed all those lies, and I had to let the idea of who I was, let it go. You know, and so that's what I've done here. And you know, it has been very weird. I'm glad they didn't, like, tell me when I got clean, like, this is going to be really weird. It's going to be mad weird. You're not going to know what's happening. What's that, like, quote when you, you know, if you want to find a new land, you need to be at sea for a while? That's a thing, right? Who went to school here? I didn't. Anybody? You did? Okay. Is that a thing? That's a thing, right? Yeah. I'm making it up if it's not. It's a new thing we're doing. That's the truth. You know, in 10 years of being clean, I've been out to sea for quite some time at times. You know, very confused. But the reason I keep coming back, you know, I'm going to get clean really quick, and then we'll stay clean for a little bit. You know, eventually, I had joined gangs in Los Angeles, and I was doing graffiti, and I lived with 11 dudes in Inglewood, and we wrote our fake name on people's walls, and we were fighting the revolution against the man, who I later found out was me. And devastating. I was like, what? No. Yeah, I was so heartbroken. I was like, I've been holding us down? such a bummer. And I really liked the story. You know what I mean? I was really attracted to the lifestyle. I really liked the story because, honestly, I only felt okay when insane things were happening. That's my truth. I really felt safe with a bunch of people shooting and selling drugs. And, you know, I loved that. That made me feel safe. But what eventually happened is I had a multitude of moments of clarity. And those are those moments where you have this connection with your spirit and you're sucked back in, and you can recognize that it's a lie, that what you're pretending to be is a lie, and that drugs are a lie, you know, and that's what happened for me. You know, my granny came from Florida, and again, my granny's very intense. I love her, but she's super intense, and my mom came and found me in Inglewood, and I've been on the streets since I was 14, and my mom came and found me, and she said, you know, I want you to come home, and I don't want your grandmother to know you're a drug addict, which is super funny, because I was like, you know what I mean, I have my own fashion line where I cut holes in everything. Nobody? Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I was kept hallucinating. I saw things that weren't there. I heard things that weren't there. And I was also bleeding from my ears. They told me I was going to be permanently deaf. So I looked kind of like a drug addict, you know? I had like a little bit of drug addict look to me. I had no eyebrows, no hair. I'd plucked everything out. I'd shaved it all off. I was ready for the war. And, you know, and so I went home, and my grandmother, you know, she didn't say anything to me. All she would do every morning is she would make me a plate of food for breakfast, and she would hand me the plate. And it always makes me cry, and I don't know why, but it was the first time that I had a real clear indication the exact nature of my wrongs. Because for a long time, I thought that what I did didn't affect anybody else. You know, and it was the first time I was really stuck back into my body, because prior to getting clean and doing step work, I had no feelings. I did not feel anything. You know, I chased crazy because it gave me some semblance of feeling something, but it was still very small. I could not feel. And from that moment forward, I made a decision to get clean, and I haven't used since. And I don't say that to be like boastful. I say that because I hold on to my clean time because I've seen so many people die. So I hold on to my clean time because I'm terrified, not because I'm a better person. You know what I mean? I've lost a lot of friends since I've been clean, and I've been in recovery my whole life. So there's a lot of people that I have loved, and that's why I hold on to it. And so I started going to meetings, and I felt very different because I was different. You know, I had no facial hair, and I was 17, and you know, and I was cooler than everyone. Obviously, at the time, I was like, I'm too cool. And I looked terrifying. And I carried weapons to meetings. I mean, it was like, everyone's like, you're not that cool, but that's okay. Keep coming back. And, you know, I would go to meetings in Hollywood, and I'd be like, I'm Sarah, I'm an addict, and I hate everyone. And they'd be like, yay, woo! And I was like, what is wrong with these people? And I just kept going back, you know. I suffered from extreme depression, probably my first 3 years clean. It makes sense that I did. It's so weird to me when people are new and they're like, I'm depressed. I'm like, of course you are. Why wouldn't you be? Of course. That's perfect. You're right where you're supposed to be. This shit's depressing. We've been doing drugs, running around. You know, it's depressing. I was also homeless for my first probably 2 to 3 years clean. And I lived at the train station in downtown LA, and I got a bicycle eventually, which was a big deal to me. And I would ride my bicycle to meetings, and I would go and stay at the train station overnight, and I would ride my bicycle to meetings, and I took the bus to meetings, and I wanted what you had. So I did what you did, you know, and sometimes I would compare myself to other people, but I honestly understood at that moment that it was different. You know what I mean? And I knew at the time that the world, you know, nobody hands you anything. You have to fight for it. And I've had to fight for my recovery. And so I did that. And eventually, I think when I had like 2 years clean, I got my first apartment, maybe 3 years, I don't know. And it was a garage in East LA. It was beautiful. Yep. And, you know, because it's all about perspective. You know, I was like, it's like a cabin on a lake. And truthfully, I would wake up next to a car and with sawdust on my face because there was holes in the ceiling. And I was so grateful, you know. And I've stayed grateful for indoor plumbing ever since that point. For real. I'm like, oh, thank you, God. Indoor plumbing, showers. My bad about the drought, but I do. I shower, like, all the time. I'm like, this is beautiful. Life is great. Because I remember what it felt like to not have socks, and I remember what it felt like to not have indoor plumbing, you know, even in my early recovery. And now I'm going to talk a little bit. So I got a sponsor when I got clean, and it was a man with a ponytail. You guys are distracting. I'm sorry. I'm too East Coast for this. I'm like, hey, you, be quiet. Sorry. No, I love you. I'm kidding. But I do have ADD, so it's real. When I got clean, I got this sponsor, and everyone's like, who's your sponsor? And I was like, it's that guy with the ponytail. And they were like, no, you need to get a woman to sponsor you. And I was like, I don't know how to talk to them. And so I got a woman that looked like a man to sponsor me. And she was like, like a hot man, though.
Weird.
Okay. Like, she was pretty. Okay. Never mind. And she changed my entire life, you know? And she absolutely changed my life, you know? If I would have known what I was walking into when I got here, I would have walked out. And not because it's, you know, insane and we all hold hands and chant. It's a little weird, but mainly because I wouldn't have felt worthy of it. You know, my life is absolutely beyond me. I live every day in a life that I don't even understand sometimes. Sometimes I'm confused. I'm like, why did you give me all this responsibility? What's going on? Do you think I'm someone else? But I do it anyway, because I think they believe it, so then I believe it, and we're all pretending anyway. You know? Right? Because the thing is, you know, what I found out, too, is, like, you can be miserable or you could be happy. That's it. That's the whole trick. So it's like, everyone's like, mwah. I'm like, yeah, we have to do the same thing anyway. So you could either be bummed out and nobody wants to be your friend, or you could be happy. There's two options. You know what I mean? I know it's crazy, but that's it. You're like, okay, I'm happy. Done. I think Abraham Lincoln said that. I don't know. You know, now I'm going to talk a little bit about step work even more so. You know, I don't always like to delve in. I also have been of service since I had, honestly, probably 30 days clean, but I got a commitment when I had 6 months clean, I believe, and I now don't have any commitments right now, so I'm not going to lie to you, but I was of service to the youth committee for 7 years. I was the Southern California regional rep. I was super involved in that, and I was also involved in H&I. I had a panel since I had a year clean, and it absolutely saved my life, hands down. I mean, and I would go in with these little girls that were me, you know, and they were in Highland Park, and they were angry, and they had no facial hair, and you know, again, it was like the exact nature of my wrongs. And what I found out was that I'm soft, you know, and I found that out through these girls, because they were so angry and they were so intense, and they'd stabbed everybody at like 12, and that was a real thing. They had done that, but really we were, you know, we were soft. You know, we were gentle. What I found out is that I am gentle. What I found out is that I am loving. And I'm also loyal and integrity-based. I mean, through doing step work, I found out so many interesting things about myself and so many redeeming qualities, you know. And, okay, so now I'm going to talk about being a victim. Everyone's favorite topic. Huh? Yeah. All right, so I was very resentful when I got clean. I hated my mother. I thought she was the Antichrist. And, you know, I wasn't stoked on anybody else either. But it was definitely her fault, because, honestly, she was the only one that was still alive. So I was like, it's got to be you, lady. And, you know, and I walked around. You know, I had done my first step. I had done my second step. I had done my third step. I had done my fourth step. And I think I had also done my fifth step, and I was still angry, and I still held on to that, and I still lived out of a backpack of old ideas. You know, if I truly believe that I'm a high school dropout and nobody loves me and my mom was a piece of shit and nobody loves me and nothing's ever okay, then I can't be any bigger than that. You can't have both. You can't be abused and also successful. It just doesn't work like that. So I had to let it go. Right? And that was painful. And that was difficult, because what I believed about myself wasn't the truth. All those things had happened, and yes, that was painful, and yes, that was sad, and yes, I had to grieve something that I had lost. But at the same time, I wasn't any of those things. Those things had already happened. You know, and the exact nature of my wrongs was choosing to believe that that was my reality today. Right? And so I had to let that stuff go. And at first, it wasn't easy. The other thing about being resentful is that it is a lot of work, and I don't have time for that today. You know what I mean? I really don't. I'm like, yeah, I don't even care, because I like myself. You know, but at the time, I didn't. I do. I like myself. Thank you. You keep starting the clap, and I love you for it, because you're like a leader right there. Yeah, you're the guy. You're just out here making the clap happen, and everyone follows. I like that. You know, so the relationship with my mother, here's what happened. I had I think I had 2 years clean, and I was 19 years old, and I don't always talk about this, but I think there's a lot of people that I love here from Bakersfield and things of that nature. I think I talked about that. Yeah, hey! I don't think people do this anymore, by the way. I don't know if that's a thing. So don't, you got it. Killing it. So I had 2 years clean. And again, this is like an outside issue, but here's the thing about Narcotics Anonymous. Since I've been in NA, I've traveled the world. I was the first person to do whatever I do in Romania, right? My job. I'm the only woman that's ever done it in Romania. They tried to kill me. That's a true story. You know, like, I've done crazy things. I've been crazy places. I have experienced life in every facet, right? So that's why I talk about these things, but it's not Narcotics Anonymous based. But the step work has primed me to live life on life's terms everywhere, because that's what our 12-step talks about. It's not only living this message in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, which is kind of difficult, but not the hardest, but taking that information outside. And that's what I live by, and that's what I do today. So I got 2 years clean, and I'm 19 years old, so I know everything. Yeah, right? Okay, tight. Yeah, I'm like, I know everything, and I sponsor everyone, and I'm God. And you're breaking all the traditions. I'm going to quote it to you. Your offenses. And yeah, I like carried the book everywhere and like yelled at people, and I just was like really intense. Now I misquote things. I don't give a shit. I'm like, whatever, read it yourself. It's fine. So anyway, I've got 2 years clean, and I'm still living on my own, and everyone has still failed me. And, you know, for Christmas, my mom gets me this 3-day seminar to this thing, right? And I'm like, I'm already in a cult, Mom. You know, I'm like, ah, I hate you. Other kids get iPods, and, you know, whatever. So I go to this thing, and it's in Orange County, and it's with a lot of white people with money, which I was very afraid of when I got clean. I really was. I was terrified. People with money and, like, with nice teeth and houses, they scared me on a very deep level. I'm still working through it, honestly. And so I went down there, and they were all, like, normal, and I was different, and I was different, and I was different, and they were normal, and I was different. You know, because, again, it's what I tell myself that becomes real. So I go. 12 hours a day, fluorescent lighting, rich white people. Scary. And I learn absolutely nothing because I know everything. Second day comes, crazy. I learn absolutely nothing because I know everything. Crazy. Third day comes, right? On the first day, the guy said, on the third day, I'm going to tell you the meaning to life. So obviously I stayed because I wanted to watch them all commit mass suicide in tracksuits. For sure. I was like, this is going to be tight. This gift is actually pretty tight. And, So I go the third day, and I'm like, I'm going to show all these people. Like, I'm going to prove everyone wrong or something. You know what I mean? I don't know. Or I'm just going to watch them do this weird thing and go to, like, their own planet or something. I don't know what's going to happen. So anyway, the guy goes, I want you to write down the saddest things that have ever happened to you. And I'm like, yes. Slow clap. I'm going to win. I've been waiting my whole life for that moment in Orange County. You know what I mean? I was like, I'm going to win. I'm going to take home the sad prize. I'm going to fuck all these people up. Yeah. So I write down, I was molested, my parents never loved me, my dad shot dope in front of me every day, all my things were sold, I was poor, you know, I was kidnapped, I was raped, I was brutalized, you know, just a whole thing. And so I've got this scroll, you know, and the guy goes, I want someone to come to the front. Now, I'm not going to go to the front because I'm a good addict, so I like to understand the deal before I sign up, you know what I mean? I didn't know the angle before I fully commit to anything. And so this woman goes to the front and goes, what's the saddest thing that's ever happened to you? And she starts to cry, and she goes, but I despise rape. And the whole room gasps. And he goes, and what did you have for breakfast? Yeah. I'm like, this guy is dark. This is dark. He's like, really? Like, these people probably paid a lot of money for this. And she goes, I had a granola bar. And he goes, and what happened to you when you were 12? I was raped. And what'd you have for breakfast? A granola bar? And what happened to you when you were 12? I was raped. And what'd you have for breakfast? A granola bar. And it hit me. For the first time, it hit me. You know, I was told that I had to let go of these things. I was told that I had to let go in order to become bigger. But I didn't understand. And at that moment, it hit me. You know, what had happened in the past was that I had been abused, neglected, fill in the blank. But today, I had a granola bar. And he said, you know, you spend your whole life thinking about what other people are thinking about you, and you fail to live. And at the end of your life, you're going to die. We're going to go to Denny's for about 15 minutes, and then we're going to get over it. So what do you want to do with your life? And it was like, from that moment forward, I understood. You know, I understood that whatever had happened, and the step work had primed me for that experience, as it always does. Whatever had happened had already happened. You know, I had to change the way I think. You know, they say a goldfish grows to the size of its tank. My tank was too small. My thinking creates my reality. You know, so if I'm a high school dropout and nobody's ever loved me and my mom's the Antichrist and nobody's ever cared for me, I can't be in a loving relationship. I can't go back to school. I can't do anything because I actually believe that about myself. You know, but when I am a whole person, when I come from a place of empowerment, which is what the principles have done for me, when I am not abused, when I am not neglected, when I am not a drug addict, when I am not dirty, when I don't live in depravity, when I don't settle for less, I can be anything that I want. You know? And if you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, you'll find whatever you're looking for. Or if you're not new, you'll find whatever you're looking for. You know, and when I got here, what I looked for was crazy. And I identified with crazy, and I followed crazy until crazy just didn't fit anymore. And trust me, I tried. You know what I mean? I wanted it to fit. But eventually what happened through doing the step work is that it just slowly dissipated. And over the years, I've become somebody different, you know. And now how much time do we have? I point to you. An hour? Yeah, okay, tight. You guys are lying to me, I think. I feel like I've been talking forever. I don't even know. It's been an hour. Oh, so I should stop. Oh. I have another hour? Is it a 2-hour speaker thing? I'm going to start doing spoken word or something. That's a joke. No, I'm not. That was my past. When I didn't realize how weird it is. All right, now I'm going to talk a little bit about recovery. So I've been talking about recovery, right? Yeah. Let me talk about later in life, because that's been what's really interesting. You know, I think for me, when I got a year clean, I wrote this list out of what I wanted out of Narcotics Anonymous, and it was even earlier than that. That was a lie. And I wrote out all these things, and I wrote, you know, I want to have peace of mind. I want to have self-esteem. I want to have a boyfriend that pays for my things. I want to have a car. I want to graduate high school, you know. And eventually I figured out what I love, and I wanted to know what I wanted to do and pursue it passionately. And there's also other literature that now feeds into that, which is The Journey Continues, right? That's what it's called. Yeah, I love that book. That's right. And it's basically all about that. You know, it's all about, it says that we are very passionate people, which we are. If we want to get high, we'll make all types of weird things happen. You know what I mean? We're like, well, all right, let's go. And we'll make a pipe out of a rake or whatever, you know. We're passionate. You want to get high? Just give me a blade of grass and a whisper. You know what I mean? You're like, what? We're very resourceful. You know, so what I've been spending my life doing is being passionate since I've been to NA. And that came in the form of service at first. That came in the form of H&I, and that was my passion. And over the years, it's changed. And so anyway, I have a beautiful life and a beautiful job today. And I just want to talk about succeeding and failing a little bit, you know. I was really comfortable with failing. It was kind of my thing. right? And so over the past few years, I've had to be okay with being successful. And it's terrifying, you know, and it's uncomfortable and it's weird. It's weird to pay bills. It's weird to get a job. It's weird to pay taxes. You know what I mean? It's weird to show up places continuously. It's weird to be in monogamous relationships. These are all very baffling things. You know, it says in the basic text, if we're not high, it's weird. You know what I mean? So doing all those other things while not high is super strange. But anyway, I've been able to travel the world, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. You know, it's been very, it's like I'm so grateful that my foundation is so sturdy in Narcotics Anonymous. I'm so grateful that I was super vigilant in my early recovery. I'm so grateful that I've worked steps repeatedly, and I've sponsored women, because there has been times it has been very dark and I've been alone, and it talks about that as well in the book, and it says you're alone with God. You know, and whatever the God of your understanding is, that's whatever to you. You know, but there has been many times like that. And, you know, and I wanted to relapse. I think I had like 3 years clean or something. And I was like, I want to smoke a blunt like a normal person. And, right? I know. Yeah. I was like, I want to do it. Snoop Dogg. And, I was like on the road and everyone was getting high, and I was like, my relationship with a power greater than myself is unorthodox, but whatever. So I was like, I do a lot for people and I'm great, and if you don't send me like a strike of lightning, I'm gonna get high. I'm gonna smoke a blunt, Snoop Dogg. And you know, I was like, I want like a burning bush or something to really let me know. And so this kid walks up to me and he said my real name, and he was like, Sarah? And I was like, God? Is that you? Wow. And he was like, no, in your face, which was a meeting that I went to on Thursday nights in Hollywood. Meanwhile, we were in a totally different state, in a different place with a bunch of people. And I was like, oh my God, you're clean. And he's like, no, I relapsed when I got here, but how are you? And then I prayed again, and I was like, can you send another one that's more clear? Because I'm still very confused. You know, but the thing about, like, staying clean is, the reason I stay clean is not because I don't like drugs. I like drugs a lot, personally. I don't know about you guys. I really like drugs. Drugs is great and weird and dark and fun. But the reason I stay clean is because I'm so connected spiritually to you guys. The reason I stay clean is because the feeling that I was looking for in getting high is something I live with every day now. Clean. So that's why I stay clean. You know, it's because I love my life today. That's why I stay clean, because I feel so free. Now, I'm going to talk about one more thing, right? All right, whatever. Okay. I'm just going to camp out here all night. I don't care. I'm going to talk about, okay, so I love my mother today. My mom is incredible, and I had to, like I said, I had to let her be different. I had to let her be a different person, and I had to change. And, you know, there's, I could mention a whole bunch of spiritual experiences that I've had with my mom, but I just want to say that because by allowing her to just be who she was, she changed, you know, and she finally became what I wanted. But I had let that go. When I was 25, I got my first birthday cake. She baked me a cake, you know, and I just stay grateful. I know. I was so excited. I was like, you did that? Did you buy this? You don't know how to bake, Ma. You know, but she did. 25, I got a birthday cake for the first time in my life. But you know what? I'm grateful. Now, I'm going to tell you guys a weird story. I've never shared about this one before because it's kind of weird, but I feel like I'm supposed to, so whatever. So, 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago now, my best friend died of an overdose, right? My friend Tom. Now, Tom has been my best friend for 7 years, so basically my whole recovery, and he was like my rock. A lot of things have changed in my life, boyfriends, jobs, money, you know, but Tom has been my heart the whole time through. And Tom just couldn't stay clean. You know, Tom was one of those people that did not want to live life on life's terms. And there's some people who struggle with that, and some people who really, I don't know what it is, but they just can't stay clean. And Tom was one of those people. So Tom, I knew Tom was going to die about 3 days before, and I don't know why, because he had relapsed previously. This time it wasn't bad, but I walked into my house one day and I just heard this voice in my head, and it said, Tom's going to die. And so I called Tom's dad, and I said, Tom's going to die. And his dad said, I don't know why you would say that. And I'm like, I don't know. So I tried to call Tom, and I called Tom for 3 days. I showed up to his apartment. He wasn't there. And Tom died. Now, it was devastating. I've lost a lot of people. There's a lot of things that have happened in 10 years. Beautiful, painful, either way. But the reason I share this story is because it's about that interconnectedness of Narcotics Anonymous. So Tom dies, and I'm incapable of functioning. And I don't know why, because, like I said, I've lost 2 sponsees. I've lost a lot of people, but Tom hit me. So I didn't talk for about a month, and I had to have emergency jaw surgery the day after Tom died. I broke out with this infection all over my face, and I had to get bone grafts in my jaw, right? Standard. Welcome to my life. This is normal. So, I love you because you get it. I'm like, yeah, right. A bone graft, sure. What else? Anything? No? Meteor? No? Okay. So anyway, I go, you know, a month later, I go to Tom's family's house and I bury Tom and I had a boyfriend at the time, and I had a boyfriend, I had a dream that my boyfriend cheated on me the night I was burying Tom, and he in fact did, right? So it's just this is with clean time. This is with, you know, keeping drama out of my life. This is with a simple life at the time, prior to all this happening. So when things go crazy, I don't really feel comfortable anymore. Like, I'm not like, oh, you cheated on me, and you're dead, and I have a surgery. Like, it doesn't feel good. I'm like, this feels gross. But that happens. When you say clean, life happens like that. And so anyway, now, you know, my boyfriend's cheating, and I'm burying Tom, and I go home, and I'm crying, and I'm reading this book, and it talks about, like, when people pass away, there's, like, a sign they can send you, which is like butterflies. And whether or not you believe in what I'm talking about, I don't care. So let me just get that off my chest. Don't give a shit. So it really doesn't matter. So I'm reading this book and I'm crying and I'm like, why couldn't we have chosen a code word like butterflies? And I'm alone, because you only cry like that when you're alone, hopefully. Respect yourself. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. That's a joke. Cry like that in public. So I'm alone and I'm doing this, and all of a sudden my phone rings, and it's a Sunday night, and it's a call from Long Island, New York, which is where I'm originally from, and it's 1 a.m. their time or 2 a.m. their time, and I pick up the phone and I'm like, hello, because I think something else tragic is about to happen, because standard. And I'm like, hello? And this guy goes, Sarah? And I go, God? No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. And he goes, I'm supposed to tell you something. And I'm like, who are you? He goes, oh, it's Paul. I'm like, okay, Paul. He's like, we met that one time. You met me and my wife and my kids. No, I'm like, Paul's trying to sleep with me. This is really awkward. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, Paul, why are you calling me at 2 a.m.? And he's like, no, I'm supposed to tell you this thing. And I'm like, what's up, Paul? And he goes, 2 weeks ago, me and my wife came home, and there was a tree delivered on her front lawn. And I'm like, okay, Paul. Good for you, man. Way to order a tree and get it. Proud of you. Yeah, thanks for sharing, Paul. And he goes, it was a red Japanese maple tree. Now, I buried my dad in Long Island underneath a red Japanese maple tree. And I'm like, okay, man, cool. And he goes, the thing is, I didn't order a tree. And I'm like, okay. And he goes, we walked over to the tree, and hundreds of butterflies flew out. And I was so blown away. And I didn't even know what to say. And I was like, Paul, are you watching me right now? Like, low-key, I was like, is the light on my computer on? Who is this guy? And he said, you know, I don't know why I'm calling you to tell you this, and I don't actually know you, and I have no idea what I'm doing right now, and I'm super confused, but I just want to let you know that what you're doing is changing people's lives. And you know, some people can't get this, but you have, and some people don't have the ability to live life big, but you do, you know, and you need to keep going. No matter what happens, you need to keep going. No matter what happens, you just need to keep going. And Paul saved my life, possibly. You know, Paul saved my spirit because my spirit was broken. And that's why I love Narcotics Anonymous and I love its members. And, you know, anyone that's in here tonight, I have the same thing to say to you that Paul did to me. And that is keep going. Because what I understand is that if we are outside in the space right now, and if we are alive, and if we are breathing, and if we have the reprieve from getting high just for today, and that obsession gets lifted just for the next 10 minutes, we all have the ability to help people. We all have the ability to change the world. And most importantly, the only time the world has changed is when I change myself. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Get up for it one more time, guys.